Well, thank you for coming. My name is Christina Knight, and I am the Director of Community Initiatives for the Master of Public Health Program at Case Western Reserve University, presenting with my colleague, Laura Centuri. And we are located in Cleveland, Ohio. That's the most common question we get. We have no financial relationships to disclose. And I'd like to just acknowledge members of our team here who participated as a part of this process. Our program director, Scott Frank, and our graduate assistant, Erica Chambers, whose research and work in transcription was really essential to this process. We have some objectives for the session, and I just want to mention that we're really going to focus on process here. We will specifically detail some of the data related to our academic and community partnerships. We will also focus on what we frame as a nominal focus group process. So we're focus groups primarily focus on ask or questions about perceptions, opinions, beliefs, and attitudes in an interactive group setting where members are free to work with or engage with other members. The nominal group process works towards a specific outcome or task, and it's really essential in problem solving and program planning. So that we know that in public health we have a charge, and we've provided some of the background here related to the charge for academic community partnerships in public health that stem from some of the seminal works with the Institute of Medicine. The way that CEEF, which is the Council, Council on Education and Public Health, has integrated this charge is really through some of the accreditation criteria, specifically related to the creation, application, and advancement of knowledge. So if you've ever been through the accreditation process or reaccreditation process, you know that you have to extensively document the extent to which you are collaborating with a diverse group of community partners. We also know from the literature that there's a lot of literature about academic community partnerships, but there are three areas or trends that you typically see. They're content specific, so you'll see a lot of partnerships about emergency preparedness or HIV prevention or some sort of education process. They're also largely service oriented and based on researchers' interest. There's been this tension that as we move from the traditional research model to the community-based model, and part of that is related to the system of promotion and tenure in academic settings. So as there is more community-engaged scholarship and research among faculty, that tension has eased a bit. We also know that there are any number of models that support academic and community partnerships, and despite the success and the increase in literature that we see about it, a HRSA work group in 2005 said that despite some success, public health programs have done a poor job of successfully collaborating and partnering with local public health agencies. When we first started the strategic planning process, we really looked internally. We have a lot of well-known individuals who work in strategic planning, and actually there's a course that walks programs and community-based organizations through that process, but students get to select the programs that engage in that process, and I guess doing strategic planning for an academic program wasn't as exciting as, say, a local nonprofit organization or the Great Lakes Science Center. They got selected over us, so we had to turn internally to really figure out how we were going to focus on that. We know from the literature that we need to use both qualitative and quantitative data and really use a consumer-oriented approach, because we know with academic programs we're really good with short-term planning, but where we fall short is really being our sort of long-term strategic and comprehensive plans. So a bit about our program, and there's a handout in the back for those of you who need it, and we will reference it throughout our presentation. We were founded in 1999, accredited in 2006, and just a month from now we'll have a reaccreditation site visit from the Council on Education and Public Health. We are academically situated in the School of Graduate Studies, but housed within the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics in the School of Medicine, 42 credit hour program, and most of our students complete the degree in less than 2 years. We have a history of collaboration in the community. I suspect that this list is quite similar to what you would see with any number of academic public health programs. So when we think about strategic planning and what we've done over time, or with this process, we identified seven constituent groups. And those groups are our dual degree partners. We have 7 dual degree programs. We have an executive committee that's responsible for program governance. We have our faculty committee, which is made up of members from the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics, our campus partners, our community partners, alumni, and students. Now, we were not able to convene a group, an individual focus group of our alumni, largely because they are just sort of geographically dispersed. But alumni were included in 5 of the other focus groups. Just based on the work that they do, once they graduate from the program, they become a campus partner or a community partner or a dual degree representative. The focus groups were conducted between November 2010 and May through 2011. Had a high end of range of 15 participants, and we have an abundance of data that comes from this process. So focus groups and debriefing meeting minutes, we have flip chart data, audio recordings, and evaluation. And for this presentation, we will focus largely on the flip chart data that was generated as a part of that process. For phase one, we utilized this nominal group approach, which I talked a bit more about at the beginning. We used an external facilitator who specialized in positive organizational development. And that was really essential because it forced us to really focus on our purpose and have shared accountability and responsibility. And for this meeting, we had 3 broad prompts. What is currently being done to achieve identified program goals? What could be done to more specifically address them? And then some work that allowed us to identify themes and specific priority areas. This image here speaks a little bit about the process that we put together. We were generally in a large room, and we had 3 separate stations set up. And again, there were 8 to 15 participants. There were 3 broad goals for our program related to education, research, and service. There were a series of individual and small group process, and individuals were pre-assigned to specific areas. Once you answered the question in your area, we did a bit of a gallery walk so that everyone could contribute to each of the 3 specific areas of education, research, and service. We used a combination of flip charts and post-it notes primarily for individual and group process decision-making, and flip charts for specific action steps and some of the theming that occurred.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about our management of the data that we obtained through this process. As Christina mentioned, we're really in this presentation only focusing on one component of the data that we collected, and that is the flip chart data. What you can see here on this slide I have circled is actually the flip chart related to what are we currently doing to achieve our goals, in this case in education, because this was the education section of our particular focus group. The really nice thing about the data that we obtained related to what are we currently doing, first of all, it gave us a sense for what are we doing well, but it also gave us a sense for what our stakeholders knew about our program, which was quite helpful. The post-its next to it, you can see an example of some of the brainstormed ideas about what could we be doing either better or how can we improve on what we're already doing to achieve our goals. And in fact, this whole section here represents some categorization of those suggestions for improvement. So after they brainstormed the individual ideas, we asked our participants to theme those ideas. And to some extent, the nice thing is that we had our participants actually begin the data analysis approach for us. Now, we had a lot of flip charts, and so we had to take all of those flip charts, and thanks to the great work of our graduate assistant, Erica, she typed all of those flip charts up into neat, easy-to-read tables. And what you see here is an example of one of our tables. This is actually from our dual degree stakeholder meeting of all our dual degree coordinators, and it represents the brainstormed ideas about what we're currently doing well to achieve our goals in education. You'll see either G1 through G3 next to each idea that just designates with which goal that idea is associated, because we have 3 goals in education. And so the end product of all the typing up of the flip chart data resulted in 36 tables of data that needed to be analyzed. We had obviously 6 structured focus groups, and we had 6 tables from each of those focus groups. What are we currently doing, and what could we be doing in the areas of education, research, and service? So we had a lot of data to analyze. So our data analysis approach, it was qualitative analysis of qualitative data. And I'll talk about this a little bit further when I talk specifically about the data analysis approach that we used. It was inductive. So we didn't go into this with preconceived codes, ideas, or even a theory to direct what we thought we might find. We really wanted, no hypothesis testing was involved in this. We really wanted the themes to emerge from the data and the stakeholders themselves. Just as with quantitative research, there is an issue of rigor, and in the qualitative world, we call this trustworthiness of data. How can we ensure that we are accurately interpreting the data that we have? Because we do know that there is some potential for bias. Obviously, MPH program, faculty, and staff were integrally involved in the entire process from data collection to data analysis. And so there are things that we did to try to ensure the trustworthiness of our data, and that included a group approach to coding. So there were four of us who got together to ensure that we followed appropriate process with the data. We will be sending the results of our data back to our participants as kind of a process of member checking to ask them, you know, did we accurately capture what you were trying to tell us? And is there anything else that you would like to add to the data? And so we'll be doing that soon. And we also allowed for results that weren't expected, which seems a little bit obvious, but I'll be honest that there was some feedback that we got from our key stakeholders that wasn't easy to hear or read, and obviously we couldn't suppress that. So let me talk a little bit specifically about the data analysis approach that we used with the data. We used content analysis, which unfortunately is often just associated with counting of words. It's a little bit more than that. In a general sense, it is a flexible method of analyzing large amounts of text data. Specifically, Weber in 1990 says, qualitative content analysis goes beyond merely counting words to examining language intensely for the purpose of classifying large amounts of text into an efficient number of categories that represent similar meanings. And that's at the heart of what we did with our data analysis approach. In 2005, a couple of authors actually identified three kinds of qualitative content analysis, a conventional approach, directional, and summative. And I won't talk about two because I'm just going to highlight what we actually did, which is the summative content analysis. And that really began with identifying certain words, language, or phrases that were used, grouping them together based on similar meanings in that language. And then taking it a step further, because it really wasn't about frequency of word usage or percentages, that's really quantitative analysis of qualitative data, that we took it a step farther with latent content analysis. So we had to move forward and do some interpretation of that language that we found. In what context did those words come up? What do we think people were referring to when they used this kind of language? In order to bring those things together, to find broader categories of data that can represent that language and those phrases. And so that's what we did with the data regarding what are we currently doing well to reach our goals. And some of the results there, we saw four broad categories in the areas of education, research, and service. A number of people commented on the number and variety of campus and community partners that we have and the variety of ways that we engage them, which Christina alluded to in the beginning of the presentation. They spoke about the support that we provide to our students, both financially and educationally. They talked about our curriculum, a lot of really good comments about our dual degree options, about our capstone experience, the fact that we integrate service learning into our curriculum, and also about evaluation. There were a lot of comments about, from course evaluations to student feedback sessions, the ways in which we sought to get evaluation or feedback from our key constituents already. Now, we had a second set of data. What could we be doing? These suggestions for improvement. We followed a very similar approach to analysis as we did with the first set of data, but took it a step further here. We created those broad categories, but really needed to put them together, compare them, what kind of overlap are there between those categories, so that we can really find the broad issues or concepts that are being addressed in the data, knowing that whatever we identified as those broad concepts would really drive phase two of our strategic planning process, specifically the definition of our subcommittees. So to give you an example from our student focus group, specifically related to our goals in education and what we could be doing better to achieve those goals, you see here a list of words, of language, phrases that came up a lot in that student focus group. And they were lumped together because they seemed to be getting at the same thing. And later on, we identified that thing as collaboration, either because these things, if we do them, they lead to effective collaboration, or because without effective collaboration, these things cannot happen. And so that's kind of the process that we went through. And we did that with all of the data, looking, grouping words and language and coming up with categories. And we came up with a total of eight categories. So in addition to collaboration, we came up with these seven other categories representing broad areas of suggestions for improvement for us. Now, obviously, we're not going to have eight subcommittees in phase two of our strategic planning. And because there is also some overlap between these categories, we needed to take it a step further and really compare these, contrast these, and condense them. And I'm so glad we took pictures of this process, because we had so many meetings and so much dialogue about this. And so we literally put them all up on the whiteboard and started having conversations. So I'd ask Christina, what do you mean by clarity and structure? What's an example of that? She'd ask me, what do you mean by curriculum? And we had lengthy discussions about what these things meant and how we could condense them. And you see them circled there, but better represented on this slide. These are the three broad concepts that we thought we could lump all of those eight categories under: curriculum, collaboration, and infrastructure. So three broad areas, three broad concepts or issues representing calls to action for what we could do to improve our program. Now, I'm not going to talk about all of them for the sake of time, but I will focus on collaboration because that is the theme of today's session. And so we broke down our call to action related to collaboration into education, research, and service. There was a call for us to have enhanced clarity of communication with our dual degree partners, especially asking for cross-disciplinary research and service efforts. Also between our own program and our broader department, greater clarity about how we fit in, because our broader department has actually changed their curriculum related to their PhD program. There was a call around the dissemination and promotion of student and faculty research. We're doing it, but how do we disseminate it? How do we promote it? And how do we bring everyone together, campus and community partners with us, to engage in multidisciplinary research efforts? And then how do we determine a strategic process for community engagement? We are doing it well. We do a good job of collaboration, but the call was really for a more formal, structured approach to that community engagement. And we haven't done analysis of all the audio recordings yet, but here is one example of a quote that you can read. So collaboration in a formal way with funding, which I think is a nice example of that call to action under service.
Okay, so the implications for this. We clearly have a mandate moving forward into phase two, which is the development of our strategic planning committee. So the three areas: collaboration, curriculum, and infrastructure. For collaboration, we really need to engage more strategically with the community in order to really achieve our goals related to education, research, and service. There's a clear mandate to take an in-depth look at our curriculum and take a really detailed review of that, as well as to take a real detailed look at our resources, both human and financial, that we framed as infrastructure. Finally, we think that this is a data-driven process with a general framework, but really clearly defined deliverables. So we knew at the very beginning we were going to engage our stakeholders because they were so essential to our process and actions as a program, and we knew at the end we need a strategic plan. But what happened in the middle, we're really allowing the data to drive that process. We think it meets the unique needs of many academic programs related to engagement with the community. I talked about the IOM charge at the beginning. You can't do public health without engaging with the community. So it's important for us to be really consistent and strategic in really detailing how we'll do that. Also, we utilize skills and practices that are really consistent with those of most MPH programs. If you are accredited, you use the competency framework. We suspect that most of your program staff or faculty would have a lot of the skills that we utilized as well. There are some strengths and limitations that we've alluded to throughout this process. So we really found that it gave voice to our key constituents and stakeholders, that the utilization of an external facilitator was really essential because it was important for us to really stay on task and not sort of get sidetracked. We think that other people can replicate this process, and that's in part why we provided that detailed schematic for you. Some limitations: clearly this takes time and resources, so it's the time of having the meetings, but also the time of transcribing data and really analyzing the large amounts of data that you obtain from this process. Faculty and staff were really strongly integrated in the process, and we recognize that as a potential source for bias. And we also indicated that there was no focus group for alumni, but alumni were in all of the other focus groups other than the one that was specific to current students. So for phase two, we formed our strategic planning committee, which is made up of representatives from each of the constituent groups and largely based on the data that we collected as part of phase one. We know now, because of that data, that we need to have three subcommittees related to collaboration, curriculum, and infrastructure, and we will move ahead at this point with the creation of a one-year and five-year strategic plan that's largely based on the data that we've obtained. For questions, we have an APHA Expo booth, and we've included our contact information in our references. Thank you very much.